Welcome into the Draft Report Podcast. I'm Jack Borowski, joined here alongside my co-host Sam Keats. On this episode, we'll go over Oregon versus Ohio State, talk all things quarterback, discuss risers before finishing off the episode with the top prospects we've watched recently. So Sam, before we get into the quarterback talk, unlike when we spoke about Georgia-Alabama, where we couldn't talk too much because it led right into the quarterback discussion, Dillon Gabriel and Will Howard are not at the forefront, let's say, of this draft class and quarterback class in particular. I think Will Howard is a definite draft pick. I don't know if Dillon Gabriel ends up getting there. You know, if we saw what we did last year, he's probably not going to be selected, and Will Howard will be a late round pick. But just what a game in general. I thought both teams did really well. Really good week of college football. And I guess my main takeaway that I want to highlight quickly is a lot of blame on Will Howard for how he handled that last play of the game, but they weren't really close to field goal range when he started to take off, and I think he kind of knew that. And I also think that you just lose track of time. It's not his fault at all. It was a really close game on the road against a talented opponent. I thought he played pretty well, actually. And I thought what we kind of saw was maybe Ohio State's defense isn't as good, and some of those guys returning didn't play as well as I expected. And then the biggest thing is they have a really good defense, but they don't have a Chase Young or a Bosa. You know, Jack Sawyer and JTT, we like Sawyer more than JTT, but neither one of them is a top 10 pick. They don't really have a top 10 pick on their team. The only guy I thought maybe they could have ended up having a season-ending injury, their left tackle Josh Simmons, in the game. But defensively, you know, you're not as high on Tyleek Williams. I don't know who else ends up getting in the first round. Maybe Sawyer does by the end of things. But I think that's one of my main takeaways. Will Howard, can't put the blame on him. And also that defense, that's a historic defense, maybe doesn't have like a top 20 pick in a weak draft class.
Yeah, the only guy right now that I have a top 20 grade on for Ohio State is Emeka Egbuka. And he's the only player I have a first round grade on from that team right now. And so Josh Simmons was my number two on that team, and he goes down. He's done for the year, unfortunately. I start to wonder a bit about this offensive line as well. You know, I think Donovan Jackson's a player who I'll need to update at some point and watch a bit more over the course of the year. But to me, they don't have any offensive lineman that I'm looking at. Like, oh, this is a second round caliber player better. Like, the offensive line that could be an issue at this point going forward with the depth. You know, there isn't college football, there's not tremendous depth. Even at the NFL level, there's not great depth of tackle. So I'll be curious to see how that offensive line holds up moving forward. Because obviously, without Jordan Burch, the Oregon Ducks just didn't have the level of talent they really needed to consistently apply pressure from the outside. But Uiagalelei, I thought Uiagalelei had a really good game. The younger brother of DJ, he did really well in that matchup. I thought he had some phenomenal reps. So I'll be a curious player to watch for next year. But I am a little worried about their offensive line going forward for Ohio State. I give a lot of credit to Dan Lanning for that. I don't know if he did on purpose or not. He's saying he's kind of like hinting he did, having 12 men on the field that towards the end of the game to get basically a five-yard penalty, but take like 4 to 5 seconds off the clock and not allow a play downfield is an interesting strategy. But you know, if it works, you're a genius. If it doesn't, you're an idiot. So it's kind of one of those situations where that's cool. I mean, they're already changing the rule. It's less than a week later. They're already changing the rule. That's not a running clock penalty anymore. But I give credit to Oregon for that. I thought Dillon Gabriel, in my opinion, was the better of the two quarterbacks in this game. But I also think that the receivers for him are a little bit more assertive early, especially look at what Evan Stewart was able to do in the matchup for the most part. They had some more explosive plays, I thought, downfield. I think Tez Johnson had a couple of reps where you see that speed show up. But yeah, I think this year, this Ohio State team is still clearly good enough to me to compete and win a championship. I just wonder if, like you, to your point, they don't really have superstar talent compared to some of the other programs that might also be in this like this class. You know, I think that, I mean, to some extent, we had this conversation with Georgia as well with their receivers and stuff like that, but you know, I don't think Will Howard's a fine quarterback. I don't think he's a really like an elevator per se in terms of a guy who's going to take over a game for you. So I do wonder if that ultimately comes to difference, the fact they don't have this superstar supporting cast per se that we thought they would. And like even the running backs in this game didn't really, like there was a Trevion Henderson had a really big play, but I don't think they really took over in a way that, like they were dominating, pushing Oregon around up front. I don't think we really got that. So interesting year, but I don't really know if we have a team that's going to like run everyone else off the field this year in college football. I just think there's
a lack of talent, like high end talent, right? When we're talking about Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams, yeah. Like, oh my God, yeah. They're unbelievable. And you could argue that they are like two of the top five best playmakers. And like Ashton Jeanthi is awesome, and he's been historically good. It's at Boise State, and outside of Oregon, they really haven't played anyone that, you know, you would say, oh my God, like, it's just like, and Travis Hunter both ways, but I'm just like, there's like five of them. It's Jeanthi, it's Travis Hunter, it's these two freshman receivers, and then there's a Penn State tight end we're going to talk about in a little bit. But no, like, there's no talent. There's just a lack of star power in college football this year.
Yeah, there's wide receivers at Missouri and Colorado, or running back at Boise State, tight ends at Bowling Green and Penn State. Like, they're just not. There's a receiver at Arizona. Like, there's just, these guys are not clustered around the teams right now that we consider to be the top contenders. So it's a very weird way how it's all ended up this way. We'll see if like Isaiah Bond might be able to elevate himself later in the year here, depending on how the quarterback situation shakes out for Texas. But we think he can be one of those players. So maybe he'll like emerge from one of the true draftable superstars on a team that's competitive right now, but kind of get to see that level of production from him so far.
No, this is starting to get like, we usually talk, wow, it's a weak draft class. I don't think I've ever seen, because you want to talk about, oh, it's got great depth. Well, when it's not a good draft class, the depth becomes top 100, right? Like, you look 70 to 100 and you're like, wow, those are some good depth picks. I never really loved the depth argument, because from draft fans, you know, in general, more casual people who aren't going to be evaluating guys who are going rounds 5 through 7, really, they want star power. And I cannot find you 20 guys really worthy of being first round selections or dominating the way that you would expect in a draft class. Everyone, for the most part, has disappointed. Like, pretty much everyone, to the point where, is it just Ashton Jeanthi goes top 10, right? Like, Ohio State, how many first rounders will they have? Georgia, we can say Mykal Williams ends up there because of, you know, his star pedigree, what he was as a freshman and flashes as a sophomore, but he's had playing like 10 snaps a game right now because of injury. It's like, who's the first rounder really on Georgia, if we're going to exclude Carson Beck, right? It feels like Texas may have the most of those, but who do they have on defense, right? That's a true game changer. It's the tackles and wide receiver.
Well, and it's funny because some of the talented players are then like at positions that traditionally don't go that high, like Malachi Starks or Georgia's clearly their most.
Oh, right. I forgot about Starks.
Like their highest viewed prospect, but he's a safety. And so where does that go per se?
Yeah.
You know, Colston Loveland's not going to be fairly productive this year because he's on Michigan. But, you know, we think he has this first round caliber like talent, or first to second round caliber talent. Tight end, not going to be very productive, not a great inline blocker. Where does he end up going? So it's going to be questionable to see how this all plays out. I think guys we're going to see in this process who are really going to end up rising are not going to be on these really like super playoff teams. Like, you're going to see a Tyler Warren. You're going to see a maybe an Arian Tirsery. It's going to be maybe Armon Membu, Nick Scorton. You know, these kind of players who are not on the current blue blood programs. Maybe it's Savanaya. Like, these kind of guys who are not on teams that you traditionally view as competing for a national championship. It's going to be those kind of players who are going to rise in this process.
Yeah, I think we're going to see, though, 20 picks, 20 to 32. Like, and it goes back, right, with Jeanthi. How many tight ends do we get that go high? But it's really not a dominant class at any position. You could maybe say running back, cornerback, keeps shooting itself in the foot with all these injuries, right? And it's like Morrison, Revell, like you could argue those were like cornerback 3 and 4 in the class who, you know, Revell, it's a big deal. He's not going to have a pre-draft process. That's where Quinyon Mitchell really made himself some money and still ended up going 22nd. So where does he fall into things of, can he still be a first rounder when we don't get to see him test? We all assume he would have tested really well, but how well? You know, Morrison was undersized. When will he be back? Because testing numbers are important for those undersized guys, right? Like, he better run well. Like, you can't have any questions taking a guy in the first round when he's undersized at cornerback. So curious how it all shakes up. But yeah, we talk about Oregon. How many first rounders do they have? Ohio State, how many first rounders do they have? This is team 2, ranked 2 and 3 at the time in the country. Right, we talk about Georgia. I forgot about Malachi Starks, but besides him, we love Jalen Walker. But like, where's the juice on offense? Right, so it's just like it's not a good gear. Like the most dominant player in the USC Penn State game was a tight end, and it makes sense. He's by far their best weapon, right? Like Penn State does not have anyone else, and USC, who's their high end draft pick on either side of the ball, really. Safety we're going to talk about. But, like, who are their guys? So, I don't know. I just think there's just such a lack of first-round talent.
It's funny because I always see these mock drafts this year, and I'm like, this is so ridiculous. I wouldn't touch this player with the top 50 pick. And then I sit down. I'm like, do I want to write a mock draft this week? And I start running through the scenarios and, like, get to, like, pick 15. I'm like, oh, maybe I should be a little less harsh on some of these mock drafts I see out there because it's not really that good. And we kind of got a sense of that in the summer when I had like 14 players or so I had in consideration for first round picks. Only like 7 or 8 of them were true first round grades. And usually I get like 12 to 14 true first round, like true first round evaluations. This year I'm at, if we stretch it, 14 guys who could potentially be first round picks. So it's very much not a great draft class this year, in my opinion. Now, there's still some very intriguing players, some very fun players to watch and evaluate, but I just don't think we're going to get, if you're looking for a blue chip franchise defining player, this is really not the year to be in the draft for it.
No, and it's guys aren't coming out of nowhere. You could argue Cam Williams has been the tackle that was needed to come out of nowhere, but I don't really feel like there's an edge rusher or D tackle. Maybe we'll get to Derek Harmon in your report, how good. But yeah, it's a tougher, it's just not a good draft class, I think, overall. And we're seeing it at the top. And goes into, you know, we're going to talk about the quarterbacks now. Do you just take them? Because it's like, you know, we're going to start with Dalen Milroe, who played South Carolina. It's just, you know, we're sitting here at 24. We've got a second round grade, theoretically, on Milroe, where we think he's a developmental starter, and our highest graded player at another position is nowhere close to, is not a first round grade. Do we just take the quarterback and hope we can develop him because he has tools? Because what else are we going to get out of this draft pick? So I don't know if that's the case, but yeah, Milroe against South Carolina. How do you think he did?
I don't think he played poorly against Vanderbilt the previous week because just the offense was out of whack. He threw, I think, 9 passes in the first half, and Ryan Williams didn't have a catch until the second half. So I think Alabama just got punched in the mouth against Vanderbilt in that first half. I don't really put a lot of that on Jalen Milroe. This week, I put a lot on Jalen Milroe. He takes 3 sacks. You know, their pressure to sack conversion rate is way too high. It's 25%, so 1 every 4 pressures turns into a sack. You don't want that for him. He's holding the ball a long time again. You know, we're still talking about 2.9 seconds, 3 seconds, time to throw. And he has 2 interceptions in this game. The one I want to give credit for to the South Carolina defensive back, whose name I'm going to pull up here in a second. Because I thought it was an incredible play. O'Donnell Fortune made an incredible play for that ball. Yeah, that was an amazing play. So I can't put too much on Miller for that because, frankly, I would like NFL quarterbacks to make that throw and get that picked off. No, I can't put too much on Milroe for that one. The other one, I think right before halftime, it's just a throw you can't make. Like it's a bad mistake. And I thought Milroe, in terms of like the football IQ and vision in this game, really showcased a lot of the things we're worried about with him. I just don't think he played smart football. He wasn't really safe with the ball. And like I said, the vision aspect of him being able to see the field and identify potential threats just wasn't there. And then you don't have the explosive plays. When he's not creating explosive downfield throws, his value is really diminished because you're not going to get the touch passes that are elite with elite precision at the intermediate level. He's not the most poised with those short throws, the check downs. So when you're not getting the explosive plays downfield, his value as a passer really declines. And then in the run game, he was fine. He gets like 70-something yards, two rushing touchdowns. But again, that's really not a takeover performance for him compared to what we've seen from him doing in the past. I just thought this was a really... this was a game that kind of loses you the Heisman, like that takes him out of the Heisman race a bit and removes him from this first-round consideration more so in my mind than the games like Garrett Nussmeier versus Ole Miss, Cam Ward versus Cal. Those were not great games for those quarterbacks, but in my opinion, this was more concerning to me for Milroe because, one, they're not running a lot of plays, they're not throwing the ball a lot, and two, when they are throwing the ball, it looks potentially like you're going to turn the ball over a lot more often than you should. So this was a very concerning game to me, and why I still consider Milroe to not be one of the 32 prospects that you would want to go after in the first round of this draft.
With Milroe, it was McCarthy, Levis, and Richardson were all kind of in the same range for you, if I'm not mistaken, at like 40, 41-ish?
Definitely. Yes. Yeah, multiple drafts. Levis and Richardson were both in the 40, like the low 40s for me.
With the three of them, would you take all three over Milroe?
I think Milroe's actually shown me more than what I got out of Richardson in college. Like Richardson in college, I just didn't like his tape very much at all. I think I would have, I'd probably take McCarthy, I think. Because it's McCarthy's offense in the NFL year one would not be fantastic. It'd be very much dumbed down to some extent. And that's not saying McCarthy is a dumb football player, but just to make sure, like for his own protection, just try to introduce him slowly to it. But I think I'd be able to do more with McCarthy off the bat than with Milroe. So I think McCarthy I would take above Milroe, but I probably would lean Milroe above Levis and Richardson.
I mean, Richardson was the fourth pick in the draft. McCarthy went 10.
It's so weird because you have that separation between Richardson and Levis, and now you have a shot. Like, if Richardson comes back this year and just is not good the rest of the way this year, and Levis is who he is right now, does that impact your decision to try to take a shot at Milroe for any chance? Like, I just, my thoughts, like, how much do the past two drafts and the performance of the quarterbacks in the past two drafts affect the team's willingness to take a player like Jalen Milroe?
Well, that's what I just wonder is we're talking about, like, he's obviously higher than Bo Nix and Michael Penix for you, who are both top 12 picks. But I just can't for some reason think, like, our team's going to invest a top 10 pick in him. Those guys are, they feel a lot safer. The offense is, I mean, it was kind of gimmicky for some of the, I don't know, right? Because we're talking about him, like, I don't see a first round pick. But as you're saying, you take him over these other guys who, you know, I mean, Levis wasn't a first round pick, but like, you know, could have got fourth or 11th, right?
Yeah, could have easily been first rounder. Yeah. It's tough because I don't. Caleb Williams is doing well right now in the past couple weeks against bad football teams. We'll see what he does against better teams. Jaden Daniels looks really good so far, although he's only throwing to one half the field for the most part. Impressive first game for Drake May. We'll see how that plays out. Lots of potential there and lots of splash plays. I just wonder that if we get, you know, Bo Nix crashes out and Anthony Richardson comes back and turns out they're better off playing Joe Flacco, and Will Levis is going to be on like the Malik Willis deal, the Malik Willis like diet for like the rest of his career. I just wonder if we get like this scenario where we get one or two first round quarterbacks and not 4 to 5.
Or do teams just keep swinging? I don't know what the answer is, or do they just keep giving these guys more chances that like we're seeing with some of these other, like you give them year three, right? I don't know. It's an interesting thing, but yeah, I agree with you. I thought that this was Milroe's worst game, maybe outside of USF. I also think it's frustrating. Like, he did not play poorly against Vanderbilt, but like, people will knock him for that game when it's like, just if they came back and won that game 42-40 or whatever, then no one would be knocking him. But just because you lose, like, it doesn't mean the quarterback played poorly. You know, wins seem to be, during the college football season, a quarterback stat of how high they should be drafted, right? You know, like, if Cam Ward, unbelievable comeback, but they lose on the last second play to Cal, do people think of him differently? Then it's still the same performance, just win versus loss. So just a thing to think about. Drew Aller versus USC. Thoughts there?
They are so lucky that won that game. Just to speak to your, like, wins are a quarterback stat for fans. Like, this, they are so lucky they won this game. You look at Aller for like the first half, with the exception that there was maybe one red zone fade to like the right side, like on the far side of the field. That was a pretty good place, but the receiver just didn't get it. I didn't think there was like a real NFL throw from him almost the entire first half. Like, it was just not a good first half. He got some stuff late in the game and some stuff in the second half where I'm like, okay, throws to the sideline were looking pretty good. Like, some of those longer throws with placement along the sideline. There were a couple of shots that were hitting the hole between the corner and the safety, kind of splitting, like, you know, that difference between that second and third level of the defense on the outside. Those look good. But I mean, if Kamari Ramsey had, like, didn't have bricks for hands, he would probably have two interceptions in this game. And as it was, he tipped one pass up that went, got intercepted by another USC defender. And Drew Aller threw the first interception he had this game, he threw it right to the defender, like, not even, didn't even see the defender drop below the route and just played catch with the defender. Like, this was not a good performance, in my opinion. I think PFF gave him two turnover-worthy plays. I don't know how that's not three. Like, I just don't understand. Because Kamari Ramsey dropped an interception there towards the very end of that game in a foot route towards the far sideline. Just dropped it. So I don't think this is a very good showing for Aller. I know he gets a lot of credit for that, making like two really impressive throws late in that game when they were driving down the field to score and to get to OT. But man, I don't think this was a good game for him at all, really. Like, I think this is just shows that, yeah, the arm talent is there. You get all these traits. Even saw some of the mobility. He ran for a couple of yards. He had some good runs in this game that were pretty nice to see. But the vision and the placement, still not nowhere near where it needs to be for him playing an NFL game.
Yeah, you talk about pure accuracy, not good. Again, yeah, I think quarterback wins that during the regular season of a college football year. To me, he's just, and I think the athleticism is way overstated and just won't translate. At like, his ability to run, he's so slow and clunky, but it works because it's college. I don't see the foot speed translating in the NFL. He's got a little bit of, it takes him very long to do things because he is so big. And the accuracy is all over the place. Yeah, you talk about the turnover-worthy passes. He had some bad decisions. The one in the first half, yeah, down the right sideline, where he actually made a good throw. I was like, wow, that was actually a good throw. Like, I was impressed. Like, I did not think he would be able to do that. I think people are saying he's taken leaps and bounds this year. It's like, he's no different, I find, than last year. These weren't the issues. Like, these games weren't the problem. And I think he, like, USC was more of a struggle in some of the games last year. He's fine against easy opponents. They're a significantly better team on paper than USC. The game should not have been that close. It ended up being that close, and they ended up really having to come back. But, like, right, like, last year and this year against Illinois, it's fine. And he has tools. But let's wait till they play Ohio State in a couple weeks. And I'm assuming he's going to struggle because he just doesn't have the ball placement that, like, even a Dylan Gabriel has. You know, he could throw those moonshots and the receivers run under him. He's not dealing with a lot of weapons outside of Tyler Warren, and they didn't really get the run game going. I don't find that athleticism is going to translate, or his ability to kind of escape and make plays with his legs. He's just very clunky and slow-footed to me. The arm talent is obviously awesome, but it takes him a lot of time to get there. I think we've seen with quarterbacks like Carson Wentz, Trevor Lawrence, you know, the wide-based quarterbacks who have those big arms, a little bit of a windup, it can be somewhat difficult at times for them to get throws off in muddy pockets. So, yeah, you know where I stand there. I think the first round hype.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Drew Aller. And on the other side, Miller Moss continuing to like look worse every week this season so far. It's so bad. Like these guys, Al and Moss would get taken if he comes out in like the sixth round, and Al would get taken in the second round or in the first round, and they'll both end up in the same place.
I do wonder, right? Like, Aller was a fourth round grade for you over the summer, still in that fourth round bucket, I'm assuming, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I think people are just, I don't know why. It's like people didn't like him over the summer and are like, oh my God, look at the improvement he's made. It's like, you didn't like him over the summer. Not that you can be taking a victory lap, but there's NFL evaluators who are like, first round. It's like, he's not playing at a first round level at all. I get it. He could throw farther than anyone else in the class, but he should honestly just go back to school anyways. So I think that would be his best bet to try and improve his stock. Not that their receivers will be any good next year and he's losing Warren. So I don't know what he does. Garrett Nussmeier versus Ole Miss. Good ending. How do you think he played overall throughout the game?
Yeah, I think he was definitely aggressive, I guess is the way to put it in this game. We have a lot of quarterbacks in this class. It's like him, Cam Ward, and Kyle McCord, who are just going to make some really dumb throws sometimes. And both, I mean, dumb as in why the heck are you throwing that? And dumb as in, I mean, that was a stupid level throw that you just completed. Like, there, he's going to do a bit of both. You need to obviously see him dial back the turnovers a bit. Like, he has back-to-back picks or back-to-back weeks, multiple interceptions. You've seen some picks that just, frankly, again, throws you shouldn't be trying this year, or some plays where he's really testing those tight windows. I do like the confidence. I do wish he would dial back every now and then. Him and Dart really were exchanging interceptions at one point in time in this game. I was like, guys, come on, please, someone. But then he stepped up late in the game. And of course, you know, if you win, it's fine. If you lose, you know, everyone puts you on blast for it. But I do like the mentality Nussmeier approaches the game with. I do like his ability to seem to come out and win late in games. And he did have some really impressive throws in this one. He seems to have those every week. But I still think you're kind of buying into the highlights for this player to some extent. He's the player I will have second round grade on, who I would anticipate to be a first round pick, probably in the late teens to somewhere in the 20s, I would say. But I do think he needs to be a bit more selective with some of those throws. There was one just a really awful interception where he's heaving the ball up into traffic, and I just don't understand what brings you to make that throw and that decision. But I'm still optimistic about this player, more so than like Aller, certainly more so than Milroe. I think there's more to him than that. But again, I just need him to dial back a little bit in terms of the throws he's trying to make.
Do you think he ends up coming out?
That's the tough question, because I think it depends almost who else comes out in this draft, to be honest with you. Because he has a shot if he goes back to school, like looking ahead. There's just not a ton of quarterbacks wowing the world right now. So I think that he could like maybe be the guy if he goes back to school next year. But I also think there's a lot of other players in this class who might, if they have one more year of eligibility, might consider doing the same thing. So I do think it kind of comes down to who goes where, because if he ends up being, you know, if you get one or two of these big names go back to school somehow, I think that coming out would be pretty beneficial to him. Personally, I'm really hoping he comes out, because we need a talent like this in the class, but we'll see. I really don't know for him. I just don't have a clear view on where he's leaning right now. Obviously been very loyal to LSU across the course of his career so far. But at the same time, like the kind of swagger he plays with, I do wonder if he like is going to just go for the NFL.
Here's my thought, because everyone brings up Arch Manning, and I think there's a good shot Manning's 2 years. Right, like the Manning family is like, you're not coming out after one. We play our senior year. Peyton did that. Right, Eli did that. Like, you're going to stay for your senior year. And so then what are you looking at, right? Like, obviously, Nico is a really big kid who is a first a five-star recruit, but you know, like, ooh.
Yeah, not playing well.
Right,
this year.
So it's like nothing. Like you can't compete with him. And let's just say Nico just comes out and dominates and is the clear number one pick. Doesn't mean Nussmeier can't go 2 or 4 or 5. Where in this year's class, if Nussmeier's behind like 3 or 4 of these guys, then he's behind 3 or 4 of these guys, and you got to wait for them all to be selected. It's almost better sometimes when you have, let's say for J.J. McCarthy, you had Caleb, Jaden, Drake. We knew quarterbacks were going 1, 2, 3. At one point, we thought maybe McCarthy was. But then afterwards, it was like, all right, he's going to fit in there somewhere for the whenever the Vikings wanted to take a quarterback or the Giants. So I think sometimes it gets so muddied that it's like you got to wait for the other guys to get picked. And if Shador comes off the board or Cam, let's say 12, well, all of a sudden, well, if one goes 12 and one goes 16, are you going 22 just because of, you know, the position this year? I don't know. So it may make sense for him and Aller to go back and try and, you know, really elevate themselves to be, you know, clear cut number one guys in the class.
Yeah, because their biggest competition next year would be just based on quarterbacks we actually seen play this year. Like Meek, Nico, Arch Manning. I mean, who else? It would be maybe like Lenore Sellers, Avery Johnson, like those kind of guys. And Sellers has had flashes.
He's
trying to get back in his groove a little bit. Like he's not consistent. And Avery Johnson is like a really good athlete, but I don't look at him saying, oh, he's going to dominate the world. Frankly, this class is like upcoming class. 2026 is filled with all these five stars who are just not very good. These five star recruits who just have not like started or like have had to transfer, or when they play are just not doing it. Like Jackson Arnold, Aiden Childs, Dante Moore, Malachi Nelson, like all these names. Jaden Rashada just don't play or at their second school or just don't look the part on the field right now. So there's a chance if you go back to school, you could be like the guy, but there's obviously risk that come with that as well.
No, of course. Now, last one, Quinn Ewers, who I'm a fan of. So I'm going to start this by saying, and this may be just a biased thing, I do feel, because we saw him go into Michigan, which you could say their offense isn't good, but that defense is pretty good. It felt like he seemed a little off. And I felt this way a tiny bit against TCU last year when he came back from his injury. And granted, brings up injuries are definitely a thing with him. But he just was missing guys that it's never like his accuracy is pretty much been spot on this year, and he just seemed like he was completely off. I actually texted you during the game, like, do you think he's still hurt? And that's what I do wonder. He seemed a little hesitant, like he was trying to play through pain a little bit. I don't know if he was tight or was pain or just getting back into it, but it's not like the defense was elite or doing anything crazy. He was just missing wide open guys, which he doesn't usually do. So I'm going to chalk it up to injury. But how did you think he played?
Yeah, this is part of what I was worried about with him after like he got hurt. He looked so confident in controlling against Michigan. It looked so easy for him. I wondered that if getting injured would kind of knock him out of that groove and that rhythm. Because I felt like he was going to just sail through the year. If he didn't have any injuries like that, I felt like he was just going to sail through everything and be fine. I do wonder if this kind of resets him in a negative way. So we'll see. But again, I don't try to put too much stock in any one single game when evaluating quarterbacks. And there were obviously weird circumstances here with him coming back from injury. So I'm not worried right now. If this happens for another 2 weeks, I will be worried.
Yeah. So let's chalk it up to that. The other three guys not coming off of injuries, Milroe, Aller, Nussmeier, and then just a little touch on Ewers, just because I think we'll get a better gauge against Georgia this weekend and a good matchup against Carson Beck. It will be a fun one to talk about. Updating the evaluations now. We got Blake Miller and Tristan Lee, the Clemson tackles, and then Ajani Cornelius and Josh Connerly, the Oregon tackles. Let's start with the Clemson guys. Your alma mater. Blake's the one I think both of us like more. How do you think he's fared so far this season? A couple good matchups. Georgia, NC State, solid. And then Florida State on paper. Good defensive line.
Yeah, he's had some okay games. I like the NC State game a lot from him. But I walked away from Georgia and from Florida State really wanting more. Like I was disappointed, ultimately, from doing the full review of his tape. I gave him a fourth-round grade in the summer. That's where I ended up with him again. Partially because the more I watch him, the more I think he's going to have to play guard. You know, he's not getting any bigger at all. He's just so lean and undersized for the position. I think he's got to play guard right now. And he's an excellent mover. Like, he's fantastic in space. He's really loose. Tremendous athlete. Good explosiveness. Good speed as well. Like, he'll do well in an outside zone scheme as a guard, but I just don't think he has the size to play tackle. And then there's a lot of issues with him as well in terms of he doesn't really re-anchor the way you want him to when he gets hit with power, which for a guy his size, he needs to. He blocks really good posture in terms of like not extending and leaning, but he does let guys into his chest a little bit too often. And while he had really good games against guys like Patrick Payton in back-to-back years, we both know Patrick Payton is pretty overrated in terms of the way we've talked about him or what other people talk about him in this draft class. When you watch him against Tyrion Ingram Dawkins for Georgia, and he just gets beat pretty cleanly once or twice. And so I don't view this player as a year one starter or a guy who can't start year one. I just think he's not going to have the power and not going to have maybe the hand usage technique to really compensate for that. And pass pro, and then the run game, what worries me, he does lean forward quite a bit. He does lean and lunge a lot, not because he's using bad posture, but because he feels like he needs to do that in order to generate enough power to actually move blockers. He feels like he needs to throw his full body weight forward, and doing that makes it really easy to swim by him or kind of get off his block and let him fall forward. Like, he just doesn't have the balance because he's trying to put all his force into moving a guy. So, I don't view him as a starter year one, but fourth round investment. Maybe he can play a little tackle for you, but can definitely play guard at a high level. That's kind of where I'm at with him.
Do you think he should go back to school?
Yeah, I think he should. There's no reason to come out, really. There's nothing he's done to really elevate his stock from where I think it would have been over the summer. And if you're just a fourth round pick, I don't know it's going to make you fall down the draft board if you go back to school. Like, I think just go back for another year.
So you had him, what was it, like 96 or 98?
I had, yeah, somewhere in there. Somewhere towards the top of the fourth round for me. Go ahead.
My question is more of, it's an awful tackle class. Like, I can't get enough names. Yeah. Does he just go in the third round because it's such a weak tackle class? Even though you don't even think he's a tackle. But let's say offensive line class.
Yeah, I don't know, because I don't know how many teams will actually view him as a tackle. That's my concern. Like, I just don't think it will happen. You're more likely to see teams look at like someone like a Johnny Cornelius, per se. And like, you're going to look at those type of players who maybe would have better careers playing inside. Like Emory Jones Jr. as well for LSU. Might be better suited at guards, but can play tackle. Like, you might see those guys go first, and then someone like Blake Miller will just go in the fourth round.
No, yeah, I'm just thinking about last year's class, and just like, it felt like if you could play offensive line, you went in the third round. It's like there was just no, it was like Javon Foster and, you know, Giovanni Manu ended up going in the fourth, and Mason McCormick and Tanner Bordellini, guys whose tape maybe wasn't even close to fourth round, but just had enough athletic tools that's where they went. And if you had like a fourth round, or even like, did you have between Bordellini, Javon Foster, Mason McCormick, like above a sixth round grade on any of them?
On McCormick, I definitely did. But Bordellini, I think, was like fifth, and Foster, I think, was also like fifth, if I recall.
Yeah, no, I thought it was interesting. Like, they, you know, weren't super highly graded. So that's what I do wonder with him. But maybe if he does go back to school, what would be like one or two things you'd want him to really improve on to elevate himself?
Be over 300 pounds. Be over 300 pounds. And like, I think he needs to do that He needs to definitely tighten up his hand, like where he's using his hands, and he needs to play with a more consistent base to really anchor against power better. And then in the running, like, he needs to not be on the ground as much as he is right now. He needs to play a much better balance. Like, he's on the ground way too much. Yeah.
No. Tristan Lee, the left tackle. Thoughts there from him this season?
Opposite of Blake Miller, because he has all the tools to be a really good player. Like, he's Miller's questionable arm length. He's this weird build and all this stuff. And he's not, you know, just doesn't have the mass to really play tackle. Lee has everything you could want. Like, the arm length is good. The build is good. The player just is not, like, the light bulb's not on for him right now. I give him a late fourth to mid fifth in the summer. I'm kind of the same on him again, because there is potential there. I think he is a go back to school guy. He's a redshirt junior. I think he is a go back to school player. But there's a lot of physical potential there in terms of just how he's built. He can definitely, like, he's definitely built like an NFL tackle. The concern is just he flies like way too much over his knees at all times. Like, he's constantly bending. He's getting pulled forward by push pull or falling forward on club swims. You know, he does have a lot of power to him, but there's just so much lunging and whiffing and poor balance. You know, it's annoying. He's such a good explosive player in the run game. He's got good suddenness. He's got really good size and strength, but his balance is awful. And that's ultimately what ruins him. So he has foot speed. He's got the movement skills. He can mirror pass rushers, but just that inability to play balanced, it makes him like non-playable in situations. Like, I can't see him starting in the NFL with the way he plays in college.
Both go back to school. Who do you? This is a little bit of a dumber question. Both go back to school. Who do you think ends up as a higher draft pick, 2026 class?
Miller is a guard, I would assume. But if the honestly, if the NFL is evaluating both of them as tackles, I wouldn't be shocked if Lee went higher. Just because, like I said, all the tools are there. It's just that he hasn't figured it out.
Oregon tackles now. We'll start with a Johnny Cornelius. His season, how has it been?
Yeah, it's been good so far. I mean, it opened up pretty horribly for both these guys. Like, the Oregon had like a moment of panic there at the start of the year, but they've really evened out since then. Love the LSU or UCLA tape for both these guys. The Michigan State tape was fantastic. It's probably the best tape I've seen for both of them so far this year. And I know that Michigan now has been demoted to like the Vanderbilt level, like, or I guess what Vanderbilt used to be in terms of like the Power Four programs. Like, they're that level kind of right now. But they were just, him and Connerly were just mowing everyone down versus Michigan State. It was phenomenal. They were great in that game. This game against Ohio State, more of a mixed bag. Funny enough, though, I don't walk out thinking that either them or the Ohio State pass rushers, like, none of them dominated. Like, they were all kind of just like even for the most part. It's weird to say. I don't know how to describe it, but like, yeah, they lost a few reps. Of course, they're going to lose a few reps, but they didn't lose a lot of reps to the point where I felt they played poorly. And the Ohio State guys won a couple of reps, but not enough to where I thought they really had great games. With Cornelius, there's still some of the concern where he's a good mover, but he's not super explosive. Like, he can still get beat around the outside by more explosive than your guys. You don't really have those players on Ohio State, so he didn't really lose in that sense. But I think he's played with a better base. At times it's too narrow. He gets his chest over his knees a little bit in the run game, especially because he is a little bit more a heavier footed mover than Connerly, but he can still climb to the second level and do damage against linebackers as well. I wish he would still tighten up his hands a bit more in pass pro. He can be a bit wide, but then he doesn't have superb length, so he needs to play a bit tighter. And then the anchor in pass pro against Ohio State, I thought could have been better. There were times where he didn't re-anchor as quickly as I wanted him to. But the positive for him, still a lot of nice power in his hands. Overall, the anchor is good, I think. And you watch him in the run game, and he's really like, he is an impactful player. I do wish there were times where he would create a little bit more displacement, play with a little bit more of a mean demeanor. But there are reps where he will take you and he will bury you. There was a great rep against Michigan State where he drives the defender 10 yards downfield and takes him to the ground. And that shows up in pass pro too. Like, he put Jack Sawyer on the turf two or three times in this game. So he is a mean offensive tackle. I gave him a third round grade again, so I didn't move on him. I still think there's some limitations there. I still think that his best long-term fit might be guard, but with this class, I think he will get a shot to play tackle because of just how things have worked out. And frankly, I had Emory Jones above him on my most recent board. They're going to flip. Like, Emory Jones, to me, has had a much more catastrophic year than Cornelius. Cornelius has been fine so far. Not great, but fine. I think Emory Jones has been, like, not a guy who play tackle in the NFL at all. So I'm planning to flip those two in my next rankings.
I think Ajani was 83, somewhere around that range for you.
Yeah, he wasn't like super far down the board. He was farther down than he was in the summer, but not, you know, middle of the third round kind of range.
When someone like, let's say, like Dame Brugler, because I read his Oregon, Ohio State top 30 guys, and he had Ajani pretty low. And then, you know, I listened to a podcast say, like, he's got to help himself regain mid-round status as he's a late-round pick. Do you think it's more like just an overreaction, like he gave up two sacks against Idaho, and less so of like really going through week-by-week tape, kind of from what you saw? Do you think it's an overreaction for, you know, people dropping him?
Well, I do think there's some legitimate concerns. We both kind of said that over the summer, but I don't think... I do think it's a bit of overreacting, yeah, too. You know, it's a little bit too much to me. Like, that ranking also had Jabbar Muhammad, like, at 27. There's going to be some DB's coach that's going to fall in love with the way Jabbar Muhammad plays football and is going to want him in the top 100, potentially. Like, he might go fourth round, but his fourth round, that's better than 27th in the whole ranking. So I don't see it happening where he's going to fall that far. You mentioned, like, the good offensive linemen just don't even reach the fourth round. Maybe Johnny gets the fourth round status, but I mean, that's like as far as I can see him going. He's not going to be late day three.
So you'd have him a tier above like a Gray Zabel and Chase Alon, or how would he work there?
Yeah, I have him just above that. So I got like those guys in the late third to early fourth round range, and I've got him squarely in third round right now.
And guy, we were both high on over the summer, Josh Connerly. How do you think he's been this season?
Yeah, I was taking a step back on him a little bit because I think in the summer I thought he could play tackle. The more I watch this film, the more I feel like, yeah, it's pretty much got to be a guard, I think. Still a really good player. I had a first-round grade on him in the summer. I gave him a second-round grade on the redo. Still a really impactful player. Like, not a player I'm feeling bad about in terms of how I graded him. Where did I have him? Let me see if I can find out where I had him most recently. But, yeah, it went down a little bit. I do think that the anchor has not improved at all, really. Like, you can still see times where he's just overpowered. There is a bit of more re-anchoring this year than last year, so there's some improvement in that sense in terms of getting that base sit after giving initial ground and then creating that stop. So I do like the fact that he's gotten a little bit better in that area. But it's still, when you're looking at him and evaluating him, what you're primarily hanging your hat on is he's just a really unique mover. Like, he is an excellent athlete. And I had him, where did I have him? On the rankings. I'm trying to find it now live, but 42. So that's not like, if he's down the board now compared to where he was previously, but he's going to hover in that low 40s to probably like in between the low 30s to low 40s range. He's going to be in that area, I think, for the rest of the way. Because he is going to be a really good guard for someone in the NFL. Like, he could be potentially even a year one starter at guard with the way he plays the sport. He's just such a smooth mover with excellent range and pass protection for a tackle, but also a guy who creates a ton of space. You look at right now, like the B gaps, and you saw this against Ohio State specifically. His ability to really kick out and drive that edge rusher out and create a massive B gap to run through, that's excellent for him. Really good horizontal displacement and really good angles to second level blocks as well. He's really impressive in space. Then I guess from, again, the arm length's not fantastic. And again, the re-anchoring, the skate, like being put on skates a little bit too much. He's just never going to be a great match for power on the outside. And he still has this issue. This happened early in the Ohio State game where his outside shoulder is still too soft. Like, he just gives up too much pressure around the outside. And I really have no idea why. Like, I can't figure it out. Honestly, the more I watch him, the more frustrated it is. Where he has the range, and he has the mobility to cover the full arc. But for whatever reason, just seems to stop. Like, he just seems to have like a limit where he does not go beyond this range. And he lets the guy kind of turn in and flip, turn the corner and go into the pocket. But he has the range to not allow it to happen. I mentioned this over the summer too. He just, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to know how to finish reps at the top of the arc. and keep guys from turning into the pocket. And he doesn't seem to have figured that out.
We still have to update our eval on these two guys, but Marcus Bowe and Armon Membu, because you talk about Connerly having a kick inside. How does he fit with the two of them?
I would have him above Bowe right now. Bo's not having a great year at tackle, but I think all the traits are still there, and he's coming off a pretty catastrophic leg injury, and we know that from like Jordan Morgan stuff. Like that is hard to return to from immediately, and you might just get better and recover entirely later on in the year. But I still have him ahead of Bowe. I got him below Membu. I think Membu is a player who I really could see being starter either tackle or guard, and to me is still a player who, like, where he ranks right now would be a first-round player, and like a first-round player in the low 20s.
Yeah. No. Was curious there. So it's good. I like the tackle duos. Sticking with the same grade on Miller, Lee firming up the grade. Cornelius is a third rounder. I like that because I think people have soured on him, and it's like he gave up two sacks against Idaho, and it's like, all right, let's relax. Like, let's watch like the real tape that's going to be impactful, and then kind of a little lower on Connerly, which I would agree with as well. You're hoping for a jump, and it's a lot of smaller players in the class, and I don't know if he's 6'4", you know, right? Like, and that's a big deal for a guy like that. So, yeah, that is those guys. Big risers from the week. Seems to be a growing theme with these first few guys we're going to talk about, at least two of the first three. But I wanted to start with Kamari Ramsey because I thought he was the best player on the field for USC. I was very impressed with him. You put him in a part of your risers article. You had him at, was it 109? On the last update, you're kind of like borderline 3/4 round grade.
Yep, 109.
Pretty good that I remember that. And so how do you think he did? What made you put him here? And not necessarily like how are moving him up or, you know, sticking the same, but just, you know, take me through how you ended up putting him as your riser.
Yeah, he had two really good stops. I think only one of them counted because I think one got eliminated by a penalty, but there are two reps in the scheme where Penn State throws the ball at Tyler Warren in the flat, and there's motion pre-snap. They're trying to get him the ball, get him in the end zone that way. They're both, like, deep in the red zone, and Ramsey is right there both times to make stops on Tyler Warren inside the five-yard line. So that's really what he has been. We saw in the first game against LSU, this guy will come downhill, make a hit, make a key tackle in short yard situations. I love that about him. And then also in coverage, he had a play where he tips the ball up. It could have been an interception, but he tips the ball up. It gets picked off by a fellow USC defender. And then he almost intercepts a rep later in the game. And the very last drive for Penn State, he almost picks off the play along the sideline. You know, if he gets that play, it's game over. So it really is like a situation where he made some of the biggest plays for USC this game. And I think that without him right now, like, they would have lost the game much sooner, certainly. He, in terms of, like, I mentioned this before, like, his ability to play some man coverage against tight ends and play off man and be successful is really impactful. But then again, that downhill burst and versatility to play and be an impact hitter in the run game, also in the pass game, it's huge for him. Now, I do think he's a little bit more, he's not as willing to come downhill and hit running backs as he is tight ends and receivers. But, you know, he's still, I think, a really good downhill player and also has more coverage skills, which you see from a player who has the kind of profile where, like, they come downhill and be big hitters. Those guys oftentimes don't have good coverage profiles, but I think Ramsey does.
Yeah, it wasn't perfect against Michigan, but I think he's really made it back the last couple of weeks against Minnesota and now Penn State. Is he moving up from 109 for you from what you've seen, or kind of sticking the same range?
I don't know. There's going to be other guys who are going to slot in ahead of him that are, like, going to be new to the rankings per se.
Yeah.
So I don't know that he'll really move up.
Next guy, weekly recurring guest, Anto Saka, Northwestern defensive end. Fun to watch him on Friday night against a pretty suspect Maryland offensive line, but he had a good game. What made you put him again?
Yeah, I didn't have a ton of reps in this game, but I thought he had some really good wins, like three pressures and tackle for loss. You just see, like, the full what he's working with this game, the explosiveness, the bend. I think he also had a B-gap counter in his play game. He has some speed to power as well. on one of the reps. So you saw like a full mixture of what he's capable of in terms of him as a rush right now. You wish he had more pass rush moves, but I do think that mixture, you have speed to power, you have bend, you've got explosiveness, you got big out counters. All the basic technical foundational elements are here for him to be a much better player in the NFL than he has been in college so far. It's just developing the pass rush arsenal at this point. But he is such a unique player in this class because there are some guys who have good burst, good bend. Like Brant Smith's got long arms, good burst as well, solid enough bend, and he counters and big up a lot. But I think Sokka is just a much more fluid athlete than that. And he is just ferocious as a rusher to an extent that you don't see from other players. The motor, the way he attacks guys, is just unique.
66. Is he moving up?
Yeah, I would imagine he'll get a little bit of bump. There's going to be some guys moving down the board. But I don't know. Like, at some point, I wonder, where's the ceiling for this player right now based on
the ceiling's one.
Some of the limited snaps again. The ceiling's one, yeah. In this class, the ceiling's wherever you want it to
be. Exactly. Next guy, ceiling maybe one, honestly. Tyler Warren, Penn State tight end. Plays everywhere. He's honestly the most fun tight end I think I've ever had, you know, while watching football, because you have some pretty good players like Bowers and everything, but this guy's playing center, quarterback, running back, and also tight end too. Obvious name to have on the list, probably the best tight end performance we've seen, really the reason Penn State was able to win this game.
Yeah, I made a rule for myself where I can't, for stock up, I can't include like consensus first round picks. Some Aston Jenty moved into that conversation this past week. I'm like, okay, I can't write him up against Hawaii. Like, I gotta be done. He's great. It was great to include him like every week for the first 4 or 5 weeks, but I can't do him anymore. I think Tyler Warren has hit that point as well, because I've mentioned him 3 or 4 times already. And I'm like, all right, he's gotta be consensus first round at this point. Like in this class, like he's gotta be. At this point, it's more of a question of will he go above Loveland, I think, because that's like he's a first rounder. It's just a question of whether he'll go above Loveland or not. And he is a new player because unlike Loveland, he can block well. And they have him doing QB sneak, they have him doing wildcat stuff, they have him lining up as center, snapping the ball in shotgun and then running downfield for a 30 plus yard touchdown. He can do everything you want him to. Like, he is a true all-around player. His versatility is fantastic, and he's got better. It's like some like Harold Fannin Jr. just a lot of the same levels of versatility for Bowling Green, but Warren is just a much bigger body.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the difference maker. He is just outstanding. He's one of the best players to watch this year. I'm so glad I had him. Like, the lowest I've ever had him is 23, I think. And I'm so glad I had him that high, because I know people were had him like in the 60s in the summer. So I'm very happy with where I've been on him throughout the course of the process.
He had him much lower than the 60s. So let's say you're an area scout that happens to cover Michigan and Penn State, because we'll make that for the cases. And your GM's like, Loveland or Tyler Warren, what is the case one for Loveland over Warren? And then who are you taking?
Yeah, for Loveland over Warren, you're saying that, well, Loveland's a better route runner. He's just a natural separator against zone, against man coverage. So you're saying that the route running savvy is just better, and you want a separator, he can do that for you. The case for Warren is that, one, like, you can put him in line for 50, 60% of his snaps and get a productive player. With Loveland, I don't think you can do that. I think he's got to play in line maybe 35% of the time or under. And I don't think you're going to get true value from him unless you're playing him mostly in the slot. That's not the case with Warren. Warren, you can put almost anywhere and you'll get value from him. So it really comes down to, how do you want to run the ball and how do you want to line up in your offensive sets? So if you're someone that wants, like, a player is going to be, I mean, I was throw like Kyle Pitts-y kind of in a way, but the guy's going to play mostly in the slot and stretch the field a bit more and offer value as a route runner, like, that's going to be Colston Loveland. But for Tyler Bourne, he is more your traditional inline tight end who can do a little bit of everything for you. Some of the guys we're seeing who are kind of dominating the modern NFL now, guys who can do both block and go out on routes. I think Warren fits more of that mold right now.
Yeah, I'm looking at, you know, Tucker Kraft in Green Bay, just what he does as a blocker and then as a good receiver. My big concern with Loveland, it's right, like, is your hope he's Dalton Kincaid type, who I don't know if the Bills are redrafting. Like, there's a reason that you got Amari Cooper. Is you need it's just is the value, like, it's a weird thing because, like, it's an odd position, these receiving tight ends. It's what's the value?
When this is the case I've made constantly for every tight end, like, I've brought this up every time I can. I didn't give Loveland like a 1-2 grade because the route running is special, but I will always say this. Why are you drafting a tight end when you just draft a wide receiver two? Because that wide receiver two, if you're a good offense, is going to have anywhere between 1,000 to 1,200 yards. And that tight end, if you're a good offense, is going to have, what, 850 yards max? That's the peak.
Right.
And if he's not blocking in line for you in an offense that runs a lot of, like, that really relies on other tight ends to help you out, if he's not going to block for you, you're not getting that excess value that would make up that extra 150 to 350 yards receiving you're not going to get from him. So that's my concern constantly. The idea that you have to take tight ends round one when they're not going to offer you value in both the run and pass game, they're not going to be these high value 1,000-yard caliber receivers. Why draft them? Because they're not going to be as productive as a wide receiver two most offenses right now.
Big board comes out tomorrow. Who's higher for you?
Warren. I think Warren will be higher.
Yeah. Nah, I was just trying to get that out of you.
It's a bit of like a knee-jerk reaction because he'll come out next week and have 12 yards and it'll be like, oh, but remember the USC game? So I don't want to like go all the way in, but I do think like I had concerns with Loveland over the summer. I wasn't as high as some people. I just had him higher on my board because this class is not good. So
the thing is, it's not like Warren. Like, here's the thing. They're on bye this week, and do they have Ohio State the next week, or is there a game in between? I don't know. But here's the thing is, their offensive coordinator, Andy Collette,
Penn State last name.
Andy Koltelnicki. I don't remember. Great offensive coordinator. He's the focal point of the offense. Like, there's no way he can't produce. Is like, if they get to him the ball, like, most teams do not basically say, we are going, their offense goes through the tight end at the collegiate level. Maybe Michigan's is the only other team that just can't throw the ball. Like, Aller's significantly better than anything Michigan's had at quarterback. But yeah, the offense goes through him. So there's no way he has 12 yards. Right? It's just like, and I guess he could. He drops every pass and he looks horrible and he only has 12 yards, I guess. But like, he catches the passes thrown his way. Right? Like, get him on like those wheel routes. They, you know, his screen passes to him, crossers, right? Like, they'll do everything to get him the ball. So I think it's going to continue. But yeah.
They'll just snap the ball to him directly.
If for some reason Aller can't get him the ball, they'll just have him pass it, you know? Like, it's one of those things where, so like, right, when you bring up like USC, is it premature? It's like, I just think this was their biggest game so far this year. And they're like, we're going to make sure we get our best player the football. And that's what they did. So hats off to their offensive coordinator. Like, most teams try and overthink things. So they're just like, nah, he's our best player. We're getting the ball as much as possible. So.
And he was your tight end two last year. Maybe that was maybe just a bit of a dumb decision not to have him as tight end one.
He needed the new OC to come in and be like, well, we had this guy last year and we didn't use him as much as I'm about to use him. It's like,
he had how many targets last year?
It's like, he played quarterback in high school. Well, he's about to score several touchdowns in, you know, air as a runner, catching the ball. So awesome performance for him. Little matchup here. Braden Swinson from versus Micah Pettis. Pettis was in the 70s for you. Swinson, I think, was right behind Saka at 67. So with the two of them, who won the battle? Why do you want to highlight it? Yeah, take me through that.
I think that Swinson ultimately like won the war, I would say, for the day. Now, he didn't versus just Pettis. And for like the first half of the first quarter, he got basically just Pettis. But then they started moving back and forth a bit. I think that he ultimately had the best game of the three, like between him and the tackles, because he did have multiple impact plays in the backfield. So I do think he had the best day overall. But I was encouraged by Pettis because I felt like he had, at this point in the year, some of the plays I've seen had not been that good, and he hadn't faced a ton of guys who I thought were really high-level NFL prospects. But You watched some of the dominant reps he had against Swinson. I was very happy to see that. Like the power element, the driving him up the arc, the ability to be explosive and to match his speed. I think that I was very impressed with some of the reps Pettis had. I know he didn't get a great grade from PFF for the game. Penalties are still an issue for him. They've been throughout the course of the year. But to me, this was a better game than Kentucky, or a better game than South Carolina. And I think that if you focus in on the best reps from this game, he was phenomenal. I still think it's a lot of the same issues he had in the summer, where it's some leaning forward, your hands are landing too wide. He's got really long arms, but his arms are getting too wide. You know, you got to tighten your hands up a bit. You got to play, reset your hands a bit more often, and be more aggressive with them. He still struggles a bit with B-gap counters. He still commits too many penalties, but I thought this was a really good game for him because of the number of, I'll say, flat-out dominant reps he had against Swinson. Now, Swinson, again, I think overall probably won the day because he's more consistent across the course of every quarter. But I do think that you look at the positive reps from Pettis, so yeah, the five or six best reps from Pettis from this game were outstanding. So I look at it both ways, where I think that neither one of these guys gets dinged for this performance, but I do think that that was just a really nice trench warfare kind of showdown. That's not going to get a lot of love, you know, in other areas, like other outlets.
Yeah. No, I am very glad that you highlighted them. Caleb Johnson, been a lot of fun to watch at Iowa this year. Was he there last year? I don't know.
Yeah, he's been there. He was there. I think he led the team in rushing last year, or like was second. I don't know. It's honestly like Tyler Goodson's the last like Iowa running back I really remember.
Yeah, the Colts running back.
But no, Caleb Johnson was there last year. He had like 463 yards rushing last year, and now he's back and much better.
463 yards against Washington because he was fantastic again. He was great. So.
Yeah, what I like most about him. And I kind of comped him a bit in discussion to another player who I had in this segment. I had a DJ Giddens there as well. Both these guys showed me something I didn't think they had this week. You know, and for Giddens, it was him being able to be more shifty and have more wiggle in the hole and in space because he made a lot of Colorado defenders miss them. Maybe that's just Colorado defenders being Colorado defenders. But I did like that from Giddens. But I thought, looking at Johnson, these are both guys who don't have the top end speed and burst to really be these explosive home run hitters, which is probably going to be the biggest concern with them. But Johnson's a bigger running back than Giddens. And what I think he has, again, this doesn't, is he has better acceleration. You watch like Johnson accelerate, and I think there's a real element to that there where he will stress some corners and some linebackers, their pursuit angles, not for full play, but he could get an extra 20 yards out of it, I think. And that's what I really like about him. He's got some legitimate acceleration for a larger player who's tough to bring down. He clearly has excellent vision to find cutback lanes, even in the open field. When he knows he can get tackled, he just fights to get maybe five more yards. Really good contact balance as well. I don't know where actually he'll go in the draft because this is a player who would be maybe not a bell cow. But even if you look at like a Tyler Allgeier player of like his rookie year, I want to say it was, where he got like 1,000 yards or whatever with Atlanta. Like Caleb Johnson could probably do that across the course of the year. It might not be the most efficient usage of him, but I do think he could give you that kind of production if an NFL team is to actually feature him for a season. Clearly doesn't do a lot as a receiver, even though I know he had a receiving touchdown this game. He's not a pass catching back, but he has the size and physicality to be good in pass pro. So you can play him on third down if you need to.
So you don't think we're looking at a top two round pick here?
I don't think so. Maybe not as much long speed as Zach Charbonnet. That's kind of like the comp. I feel like that's the comp everyone uses now for like some of the more powerful guys. And even like Charbonnet, like would Seattle take Charbonnet in the second round if they did a redraft?
Yes.
I don't know if they would.
They would. So, I don't know if other teams.
Oh, they.
They would take. Yeah. They would take a third running back.
Yeah, but Pete Carroll's not there anymore, so maybe not the new Seahawks, but. Dan Snyder, I guess, is still there. But not Snyder. Who's the GM for Seattle? Why did I say?
It's John Schneider. You're close.
John Schneider. That's who I'm thinking. I'm like, Dan Snyder is definitely not the one I was thinking about. But no, I think that I'm going to view him more as a third-round guy or like a 3-4. Mm-hmm. He might be a top-under player. Like, I think he's going to be a top-under player for me on my next board. Mm-hmm. I think he will get in that third-round bucket. But it's just a question of, you know, how high can he go? Because he does have, I think, a built-in ceiling to some extent. but definitely a guy who like should contribute as a rookie.
Next up, last one I wanted to highlight from here, Jake Brenningstuhl. A little bit forgotten with the talk of Loveland versus Warren. How has he fared so far, and what made you add him to the list?
Yeah, I mean, going back to the past 2 years, the games where he's had 90-plus yards when it comes to actually throwing the ball a lot. App State, Kentucky, Miami, NC State, and Wake Forest this past week. Seven receptions, 104 yards, a touchdown. Could have had another touchdown, but K kind of just missed him on a post route. Just a really good player in terms of like the size. Not an inline blocker, so he's a limited player in that sense, but he does have good height, good wingspan, really nice speed as well, so he can stretch defenses downfield. You see some of the love guys like Gunnar Helmer getting based off his performance against Michigan and then this past week against Oklahoma. And not to take away from Gunnar Helm, but Brenningstuhl is a faster player. He is going to be more explosive. He's going to create more for you after the catch. Really good acceleration as well and a good separator. So I just think that he's gotten forgotten. He's been forgotten a little bit in terms of like Loveland, Warren, Harold Fan Jr. having the year he's having, Gunnar Helm breaking out. People obviously know Mason Taylor more in terms of the name brand. Terrence Ferguson as well. But I think that Brenningstuhl is probably for me still tight end three in this class.
Is it close with the other guys? Is it like the two at the top and then Brenningstuhl's closer? Is he by himself?
I guess kind of by himself. Maybe you have, depending on who you're talking to, like a fan pushing for him a little bit. But I think we're a Ferguson. But I think it's the top two clearly, and then the divide between them and the rest of the class.
No. Yeah. I wanted you to highlight him just because, yeah, we're talking about all these other guys and haven't really mentioned him much. So he played well against Wake Forest. Prospects watched: Jordan Phillips, defensive tackle, Maryland. Derek Harmon, defensive tackle, Oregon. Jordan Burch, defensive end, Oregon. Jahad Campbell, linebacker, Alabama. And Deontay Lawson, linebacker, Alabama. So we'll start with the Maryland D tackle, Jordan Phillips.
Yeah, you and I kind of talked about him a little bit. It was a freaks list inclusion. So he's got really good, like, in terms of traits, in terms of weight room stuff. Checks a lot of boxes, but I just don't see the next level stuff yet. No, I gave him a mid-fifth to early sixth-round grade. Really good spin move. Nice raw power as well, but just no elite athletic traits, and he's really underdeveloped technically. I think he's got to go back to school. Like, I don't see him coming out in this year's draft class. It doesn't shed blocks well. There's no real pass rush plan there for him consistently. I just don't see him make an impact on a down-to-down basis. So I don't see a world where he can come out right now, because he has in physical traits. I don't think he's got the best arm length in the world. The pass rush plan is just not there. I mean, he gets like a spin. He'll have some counters with swipes and swims. He's got a club swim. It's a nice bull rush. But that's really it. He doesn't deploy those consistently. The pad level's inconsistent. I just don't see this guy being he doesn't anchor consistently against the run. Like, there's just not a lot to work with here. He just has some really nice reps. He had, I think, a spin move this past Thursday night. It was just awesome. But then the rest of the game was pretty quiet and just didn't get anything else out of him. So I really think that he's got to develop, because he's not there right now as an NFL prospect.
Do you think he could get there, in your opinion, to being a higher end guy or no? Or top 100?
I mean, it's going to take a couple. It's going to take a while. Like, it's going to be, he'll be a breakout. I'll view him as a breakout player if he gets there. Because right now, I just don't see a path for him to do it. This is only a second year playing significant snaps in college, so maybe it happens in year three, but I don't know. In that Maryland program, I'm a bit worried. They have some tendencies to underdevelop, like, linemen both on offense and defense a bit. Or, like, to take 6 years to do it for some of these guys. So I wouldn't bet on him being a top 100 player next year. I just wouldn't bet on that right now.
Next up, Derek Harmon from Oregon.
Really fun and really frustrating player at the same time. I gave him a late second to early third round evaluation. I think they talked about him coming from Michigan State to Oregon and losing some weight and, like, just getting a better build overall. And he does definitely look different on tape, but I think he's a really disruptive interior presence with really good length, quickness, nice power as well. He can impact both the run and pass game. What frustrates me, and you saw this against Ohio State multiple times, is he gets in the backfield. He might even get hands on the ball carrier as a quarterback, but he just cannot finish plays. Like he slides off tackle attempts, and you watch him when trying to corral the quarterback in the pocket. And he just does not have the bend and agility to do it. Like he runs by the guy. It's so easy to avoid him. And unfortunately, he does a lot of plays where he gets back there. He can make the stop and just doesn't. So right now, I think there's a ton of potential for him, which is why I have him late second, early third round. But he needs to start finishing these plays in the backfield. Like at some point, potential becomes unrealized and then it's just not there anymore. So for him, he gets in the backfield often, but I need him to really finish the play, make the tackle, make the sack. Don't just finish with the pressure. Don't just create disruption. Need to finish the play more often. But he's got really good arm length. He's really quick off the line. He'll get his hands active early in the rep. He uses push pulls, rips, two-hand swipes, swims, club swims, long arm moves as well. Really nice power to it, an impressive closing burst once he gets past the offensive lineman. There are sometimes in the run game, well, he used those long arms to really pry up the guard's pad level to win the leverage battle. He will reset line of scrimmage with his power. And he stacks and shed blocks really easily with his long arms. So I think there's a lot to like about him. He is not a really twitchy athlete, not a very sudden player. He has a very high cut frame. Like he's very much on stilts kind of to some extent. Like it's very odd build, I would say. It hasn't really negatively impacted him outside of not having the best bend in agility. Like, there's some stiffness there to him because of how he's built. And he still needs to develop his pass rush moves and plan right now. But I think there's a lot of traits to work with. Again, like the long arms, the burst, the power there, that combination you don't find very often, which is why I'd be willing to invest in him late second, early third round.
Two questions. One, do you think he gets in the first round? And two, would you take him or TJ Sanders?
So I think Harmon's had a better year so far. I would probably just take TJ Sanders because I think his role is more projectable and he's the more fluid athlete. So I think I would go Sanders. But I think that Harmon has had the better year so far. To me, he's not a first round guy. Like, I just don't. With that build and the way he moves once he gets into the backfield, I just think he's better off in tight spaces sometimes. Like he's, again, really good at closing bursts, like really good open field speed. But I don't know that he can break down and make a tackle in the open field the way you'd want to.
Jordan Birch, pass rusher, Oregon, who did not play against Ohio State.
Yeah, I find him mixed stuff about like the injury and all that. Like this might be a guy who doesn't play the rest of the
year.
I think
he's done.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because like we've talked about this a bit. And the Broncos is like, well, he's questionable. He might play. He's questionable. We didn't see him in warmups. He didn't come out with the team, but he's questionable. Well, yeah. Oregon's just saying that. You don't have to report these injuries and their severity in college as much as you do like in the NFL. Like, of course, they're going to say, like, prepare for Jordan Birch if you're Ohio State. But in reality, he's just not going to play the rest of the year, probably. This stinks. This is off. Like, losing him and losing Josh Simmons in the game itself was so frustrating because one, it would have been such a cool battle to see both these guys on the field for the full game. Birch was having his best year so far. And he's been in college for a long time, but he was having his best year by far this season. I would have given him probably a third round grade, like right off of this year. And I think he was trending towards being a lock-in top 100 guy. Right now, I'm going to sit with a late third to early fourth rounder on him because there was so much inconsistency and so much underperforming before this year. And then you lose him after like five or six games. It's not really a big enough sample size for me to fully embrace it. And I also like will need to learn the injury and what extent that impacts him. But first half of the year, best he's ever looked in his career. Really explosive athlete with enough bending to win around the corner and the good play strength to really challenge anchors. You see speed to power from him. He's a valuable run defender, but I do think it's kind of questionable. Like, people talk about him being a really good run defender. I don't really see him being an elite player like that. He's a really good athlete, which helps him out in run defense, but I don't know that he is going to be like a takeover run defender by any sense of the definition. To me, he's more of a two-point stance, maybe three-point stance outside linebacker type player than like a true defensive end. I know he lets him at 295. He's not 295. Like he's probably 280, I would say. Not the kind of guy who's going to reduce inside. I know they do that in Oregon. Doesn't make any sense to me why they ask him to do that. He's just not valuable on the interior. Like, so more on the outside, but density built frame, relentless motor, I already mentioned, like, good bend, good dip as well. Like, can turn the corner and win that way. He has a ghost move, which is really fun to see from these guys. But he's got ghost moves. He's got rip, swim, an inside spin that's really good. A good longer move as well. And he can convert speed to power. You see him use his longer move and that initial shock of his power to really open up the big gap and counter inside. He's good at, like, his footwork, setting up his pass rush moves is really impressive as well. Like, kind of set the tackle to fail. So the footwork is really nice. Lots like with how active his hands are throughout the course of the play, and good burst as well. And he gets his hands in throwing lanes too. Like, when he's not getting home, he's going to get his hands up, try to knock that ball down. Nice lateral agility as well. He is an older player with questionable arm length. Again, listed weight, don't pay attention to that. It's not real for him. Now, but not all guys going to have like that positional versatility in the NFL. I do think his hand placement when he's rushing can be more consistent, and he needs to replace his hands quicker when he's not in the ideal spot. It allows guys into his frame way too often. It does not maximize his hands frequently enough. He just gets too many alignment into his frame, and then he doesn't really break clamps the way you want him to. He's playing chest to chest too much. Like, he's playing way too close to these guys. There's some inconsistencies trying to convert power, speed to power in his bull rush. Like, he needs to work on that a little bit. Doesn't always have the power to break anchors and really drive guys back into the pocket. Hand counters can be worked on a bit. And there's some hip stiffness to him that pops up every now and then, but it's not a massive deal, in my opinion. And then this is the point I have with him. Like, he does not anchor at the point of attack the way you think a guy who plays like 280, 295 would. He doesn't anchor at the point of attack at a high level. To me, he's more of a penetrating type player in run defense a bit. And he does have some nice stack and chin moments, but just not consistent really for him.
Yeah, it clouds everything. The injury, it's a weird thing because it's like, this was the game he needed to play, and we're not going to be able to see it. Granted, you know, who knows how long that would have lasted with Simmons being hurt, but he was trending in the right direction. But what do you do now is the real thing. Is how do you approach?
Yeah, if you're optimistic, you're still saying this guy's the top 100 player. Like, if you're optimistic, you still have him third round grade, I think.
You know, 80 to 100, how does he get out of that range? I just can't see it. Even with a season-ending injury, I just can't see him getting out of that range. Is it you look at it and you're like, there's no one here. I think he was trending towards being higher than a third-round pick, just with how the NFL seems to value guys who are former five-star recruits who have really impressive size. And I mean, I've been hearing about Jordan Burch's name in NFL circles for years of him just not doing
anything.
Oh,
yeah. Go back to South Carolina. Yeah. What's funny, I've seen a lot of people highlighting like Kyle Kinnard this year, but I think Jordan Burch's tape is way better than Kyle Kinnard's, like significantly better in my opinion. And Kinnard to me is like a fourth round pick, but Burch's tape is way better this year.
No, I agree with you. Kinnard's been a very solid college player. Burch has been better and is way more projectable.
Yeah.
It would have been fun to see Burch and Dylan Stewart together. That would have been a really good duo of just massive defensive ends. You know, eventually he was going to go high just because the size is just too good for teams to pass up on. But yeah, I even with an injury, I can't see him getting out of the third. Alabama linebackers, Jahad Campbell, Deontay Lawson, start with whoever you'd like, go any which direction you want. The only thing I have for you is with Campbell, you have to tell me after you're done with the reports your thoughts on him as an edge rusher.
Yeah, I don't play him on the edge. Just don't do
so
it.
You're, like, you're so much value. I was player. Like, yo, go any way you want, end with it. And you're like, don't play him on the edge. No, I'm kidding. All right.
Yeah. No, there was a really good rep against South Carolina where you see him like bend around the outside and just like see him dip low and finish. He's a fantastic athlete. The passer's plan's not there. Like, this would take a couple of years to develop that. But he's undersized for the role as well. But the value he offers in coverage, like, you don't want to negate that. That's an off-ball linebacker. Like, people talk about like what Harold Perkins can bring to you as like this guy who can rush the passer, but can also play second level in space. To me, Campbell is already a better player in coverage than Perkins ever was. Like, I gave a third round grade to Campbell, and maybe that's a round too high, but I did give him a third round grade because I'm excited for this player in terms of like the height, weight, speed combination for him and the length he has. Like, I'm very excited for him. And it might take another year to put it all together. Maybe he goes back to school. But Yeah, I know they played him on the edge against South Carolina like half the game. Maybe they're trying to find their best combination of guys. But to me, I think this guy will play off ball in the NFL. And I think he does have top 100 potential because of how he will test and how he will measure in. Lawson, less so. Not as speedy. I think it's a bit of a concern, you know, but still maybe more traditional. The way he's built and the way he approaches the game, more traditional off-ball linebacker. I give him a fourth. Like, he doesn't blow me away. I'm not super excited, but I think he's good. Like, there's certainly talent there. Here's how I would frame it. So, Lawson is really good in terms of coverage right now. Campbell, better range, better speed. You watch him cover guys at the seam. Just awesome range, and he's developing a better understanding for how to cover guys. I think in man coverage, too. Gives you way more upside than someone like Deontay Lawson. Lawson in zone coverage right now, like short to intermediate zones, better player. Reads the quarterback's eyes, really good understanding of like where our routes are. You see him, he's the green dot for the team. You see him communicate post and pre-snap in terms of where guys need to be in coverage. Really smart player in terms of like football IQ in zone coverage. But not as athletic. Limited range, not good in man coverage. Can't mirror match guys in space, like in coverage and man. So that's where the difference are in coverage. In terms of pass rushing, obviously Lawson can blitz, but I think Campbell can actually give you some reps on the edge because he has long arms, he has speed and explosiveness, he has bend. But it's really him trying to bend on the edge or trying like long arm you to death. And it's really the only options you really have for him as a rusher. So that's why I'm not too high on him in that sense. And then we talk about run defense right now. I think that Lawson, both these guys have inconsistent run fits at times. They do overrun plays in pursuit. They do maybe come down a bit too early. Sometimes they fit the wrong gap. So they're both concerns there. I think Lawson arrives with a good power in his hands to kind of stun some climbing linemen. But the issue for him is that while he does have like a swipe and a swim to try to get off blocks and does trigger downhill quickly, he really has to beat linemen to their landmarks in the run game. Because he doesn't have the ability to separate from blocks the same way Campbell does. Lawson can kind of get trapped in those blocks. He does get shut down and locked in a bit more. And that's what my concern about him. He just doesn't get off blocks the way that Campbell does. Campbell like gets off blocks basically whenever he wants to. there's some times where if he gets blocked in the perimeter and there's like an angle on him, like you can drive him with the angle to the sideline. But if you're trying to do him like one-on-one, like face-to-face, it's really hard to actually contain him with the block because he has the long arms and he has the speed and agility. And I would go as far as to say that Campbell has some twitch to his game in terms of like the short area twitch to get around, dance around a blocker and really show off some fancy footwork. That short area quickness to elude blocks is really evident with him. And Lawson can do a little bit of that, but not nearly as much because he's just not that caliber of an athlete. Both of them are pretty good tacklers. Lawson will dive and miss tackle sometimes in the hole. There was one rep against, I think it was South Carolina this past week, where he's one-on-one in the hole with the running back and he just whiffs entirely, like completely misses. But for the most part, he and Campbell do square up guys and they do drive through them and finish tackles to the ground. They're traditionally good tacklers, I would say. But I just think that Campbell has much higher ceiling as a player because of what he can do for you in coverage and because he is such a superb athlete.
You not having a higher grade on Campbell is going to be very difficult for this linebacker class because I think he was kind of their saving grace. It's just been a weak linebacker group the last couple of years. Not that you're low on him, obviously. You are not.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always kind of... I have trouble finding second-round linebackers a lot of times. Maybe that's because I'm a little biased against the position, but it's just tough with linebacker. You know, they are so hit or miss in the NFL.
100%.
Like, that's why I don't want to invest the first round pick in a linebacker a lot of times because you just don't know what you're getting anymore. Like it used to be pretty clean. I feel like there was more hits back in the day, but now it just feels like you have no idea what value you're going to get from drafting an off ball linebacker in the first round. Campbell, to me, is a player who could finish like tier five, late second, early third round. He could get there. Right now, he will be an early third rounder for me. But like him, Lander Barton's got a lot of speed to his game. Barrett Carter, who we've known for years and is good in coverage, like those guys to me are kind of carrying this linebacker class. And even then, like I think Barrett Carter to me has had a good year, but he's had some really bad moments. Barton's been a bit more inconsistent than that. So we'll see how this all stacks up, but it's not a good linebacker class.
I agree, as always. Not a good linebacker class, but that was Jordan Phillips, Derek Harmon, Jordan Burch, Jahad Campbell, Deontay Lawson. Good group of guys this week. Thank you for listening to the Draft Report. Catch us every Wednesday talking all things NFL draft related.